Welcome to Least of These, where I cover the cases that need it most, because every life matters and everyone deserves justice. I'm your host, Leah D., and today I'll be covering the case of Angela Freeman in Petal, Mississippi. Let's get right to it. In the quiet woods of Perry County, Mississippi, where the Leaf River bends through the trees, stands an abandoned relic of a long-gone era, the iron truss of Monad Bridge. Built by the Chicago Bridge and Iron Company, the bridge once linked rural farmlands across the river, serving as a vital crossing for the surrounding communities. But over the years, time and weather took their toll. In December of 1992, engineers discovered that the rivets on one of the main trusses had rusted out, leaving the structure unstable. Monad Bridge was no longer an essential infrastructure, so instead of making expensive repairs to an ancient bridge, officials made a simpler choice. A bridge close sign was posted and mounds of dirt were pushed into place to keep cars from driving across. Though it was no longer accessible by vehicle, people still found their way out to the bridge, to fish the Leaf River, stargaze beneath the open sky, or just to take a quiet walk. Over time, the old abandoned bridge became a popular hangout spot for local teens, a place that felt tucked away from the rest of the world. In April of 1996, Monad Bridge would become a designated Mississippi landmark, officially recognized as a piece of the state's history. But before it could be remembered for what it once was, the bridge would become known for something far darker. Monad Bridge would become the center of a disappearance and a double murder that would forever change the quiet woods of Perry County. We'll have to take it back to 1993. Angela Freeman was 17 years old and still trying to find her way in life. According to NBC News, Angela had left high school in her sophomore year and was working at the local Crystal restaurant after bouncing around a few other entry-level jobs. She'd recently saved up enough money to buy a new car with the help of her mom, Deborah. It was a silver 1984 Honda Accord hatchback. At the same time, Angela hadn't given up on her education. She was studying for her GED or high school equivalency and dreamed of becoming a nurse. She planned to move into an apartment with her friend Paula. But those plans were about to grow. Angela found out that she was pregnant. While many teenage girls might have felt overwhelmed, that wasn't the case for Angela. According to her mom, Deborah, she later spoke to Dateline, Angela loved babies, and learning the news that she was expecting one of her own excited her. Angela wanted nothing more than to become a mom. And maybe part of the reason was because Angela had been raised by a young mom herself. Deborah was just 17 when she gave birth to Angela in 1976. Angela's father was not involved and Deborah had raised her daughter all on her own, right there in Petal, Mississippi. When Angela was 3, Deborah remarried and had a son, Nicholas, but the marriage didn't last long. That didn't matter to Angela, though, because now she had a baby brother. A little brother she was very protective of. When Angela found out she was expecting, she began preparing immediately. She bought baby clothes with what little money she had left after paying for her car. Soon, a drawer at her mother's house was filled with tiny outfits. She learned that the baby she was carrying was a girl and planned to name her Christian. She was counting down the days until she could hold her daughter in her arms. Fast forward to Wednesday, September 8, 1993. By this point, Angela was about 4 months pregnant. Dateline reported that that afternoon, Angela was home with her mother and brother. Because Deborah and Angela worked opposite shifts, they rarely saw each other for more than an hour or two at a time. That day, they talked in the kitchen, catching up. They sat and talked for a while, and then Angela told Deborah that she was going to stay a few nights with her friend Paula at her apartment. Paula was the friend Angela had planned to move in with. Anyhow, Angela gave her mom money to pay her car note and headed out the door to Paula's. Before hopping into her car, Angela said to Deborah, "Mama, I love you. I'll see you Friday." Deborah told her daughter that she loved her too, and Angela's silver hatchback pulled away. Deborah went on about life, believing that she'd see Angela that Friday. Thursday came and went, and then early in the morning on Friday, Deborah's phone rang. It was Angela's boss at Crystal. Angela hadn't shown up for her 6 a.m. shift. At first, Deborah didn't panic. Maybe she had overslept. Surely she was at Paula's and had somehow missed her alarm. Or maybe she'd gone to another friend's house. She'd probably walk through the doors of the restaurant at any moment. Deborah began calling around to all of Angela's friends' houses. Remember, this was 1993. Cell phones weren't a thing, so she was dialing them up the old-fashioned way on a landline. But none of Angela's friends knew where she was. Deborah also called Angela's ex-boyfriend to see if he knew where she was. But Angela's ex-boyfriend, who worked at a nearby Pizza Hut, claimed he hadn't seen her. Hours ticked on with no sign of Angela, and her mom became more and more worried. She contacted the Perry County Sheriff's Office, and according to Deborah, the deputies told her that teenagers went missing all of the time, and that she'd turn up in a day or two. They assumed she had just been out partying, lost track of time, and would be back soon. But Deborah tried to explain that Angela was pregnant, and she took her pregnancy very seriously. There was no way in hell she'd be out partying or do anything that would jeopardize the health of her growing baby. Initially, police weren't doing anything to help find her, so the family took matters into their own hands. According to Dateline, Angela's uncle, who lived nearby, was out driving around looking for his niece. It was about 3:45 p.m. Friday night when he went out near the Monad Bridge, and that's when he found it. Angela's 1984 Honda Accord had been abandoned near the old bridge. Angela's car was there, but Angela was gone. Deborah rushed to the scene. She immediately knew something was wrong. Angela would have never just abandoned her car like that. She had worked so hard to get it. She had religiously made her car note payment to her mom every month. And with a baby on the way, she'd need reliable transportation. And with that, Deborah called the Perry County Sheriff's Office. According to Deborah, as she spoke to the Clarion Ledger, 25 minutes after she placed that call, a deputy arrived. She watched as the deputy approached a suspicious puddle on the bridge that to her looked like blood. Deborah said, "That deputy got down, took his knife and stirred up in it, and said it was transmission fluid from a log truck. No sample was taken. We assumed they knew what they were talking about." Deborah tried to explain to the deputies that she thought something was very wrong, but again they told her that teenagers went missing all of the time. And after taking a quick look around at the scene and at the car, the police told Deborah that she could take Angela's car home. They didn't search the bridge or take any steps to preserve the scene. The sheriff's office never tried to get fingerprints from the car either. According to Deborah, they told her that they didn't have the equipment. And just like that, the car was turned over to Angela's family. The Hattiesburg American reported that Deborah's husband at the time drove the car home holding napkins in his hands to prevent him from leaving or disturbing any fingerprints that might have been there, hoping that at some point police would actually process the car for evidence. When the couple got the car back home, they took a good look themselves, and that's when they found what they thought, again, looked like blood on that car. This time, Deborah called Pedal Police, and swabs were taken from the car and the puddle on the bridge. Lab tests would later confirm what Deborah feared. It was human blood. The month of March includes International Women's Day, where we take a moment to celebrate women's strength and progress, while also recognizing just how much they carry every day. Between caring for others and managing unseen responsibilities, their emotional well-being can easily be overlooked, and oftentimes it is. We want to remind women how much they matter, and that therapy offers a space for them to take care of themselves in the way they deserve. I know I certainly wouldn't be here today without the strong women in my life, especially my granny. And this season, I've been able to spend more time taking care of her, and I'm constantly reminded of how many sacrifices she made not only to help her family, but anyone and everyone she could. She worked hard whether out in the pasture taking care of her cattle or in the kitchen whipping up her almost world-famous dinner rolls. No matter how hard I try, I still can't quite get that recipe right. I'm not sure I ever will. As women, it's important as we care for everyone else that we take time to take care of ourselves. So this month, take a moment to pause and reflect on the roles you play, the expectations placed on you, and the pressure you feel every day. It's a lot to balance, and that's where therapy can help. Therapy can help you create balance, set healthy boundaries, and support your overall well-being, which in turn supports everyone. The right therapist can make all the difference, and BetterHelp is committed to helping you find your perfect match. BetterHelp does the initial matching work for you, so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences. And BetterHelp's 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right the first time. But if you aren't happy with your match, you can switch to a different therapist at any time from their tailored recommendations. Your emotional well-being matters. Find support and feel lighter in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
It's a strange shift, isn't it? The parent who raised you needs some help. And you want to be there. With Care.com, you don't have to do it alone. Whether you're clear on the kind of care your aging loved one needs or still figuring it out, we've got support. Find background-checked in-home senior caregivers for anything from companionship to dementia care. Or browse senior living communities, read reviews, even schedule a tour. Plus, access to safety checks to help with your peace of mind. Still not sure what's best? Our senior care advisors, who are all master's-level social workers, can help you build a plan. For a limited time, use the code LISTEN20 for 20% off your initial Care.com subscription. That's LISTEN20, all one word, good for 20% off. Start your senior care journey with confidence.
Days after 17-year-old Angela Freeman vanished, Petal police discovered that what the sheriff's office initially thought was transmission fluid on the Monad Bridge was actually blood. Police finally began to consider that Angela wasn't just missing of her own accord. Investigators interviewed those closest to Angela to put together a timeline leading up to her disappearance. They turned to the friend she'd been staying with, Paula. Paula told police that Angela had come to her apartment that Wednesday night just as she told her mom she was going to. Dateline reported that Paula told investigators that the following day, so that brings us to Thursday, September 9th, she had left Angela at her apartment while she went to go and visit a family member. When Paula left the apartment, Angela was asleep. When Paula returned later that day, Angela was gone, but she had left a note. In the note, Angela wrote that she was going to visit her ex-boyfriend at the Pizza Hut where he worked. She said she'd be back at the apartment around midnight and asked Paula to leave the chain unlocked so she could get back in. Remember, Deborah had called this ex-boyfriend and asked if he had seen Angela in the moments after she missed her shift at Crystal, and he told her that he hadn't seen her. Interesting, isn't it? Now, this ex-boyfriend has never been publicly named by police. But let's call him, I don't know, how about Steven? Yeah, Steven works. Paula went on to say that that's the last she had heard from Angela. She had never returned to the apartment that night. Employees at the Petal Pizza Hut confirmed that they had saw Angela at the restaurant that Thursday night. They went on to explain that they had last seen her talking outside in the parking lot with Steven at around 1 a.m. as they all left to go home for the night. 5 hours after she was last seen by the Pizza Hut employees, Angela Freeman missed her shift at work. Of course, investigators needed to talk to Steven, and they did. However, what he told police has never been made public. But he did speak to the Hattiesburg American back in 1993. When asked if he knew where Angela could be, Stephen stated, "I really don't know. I've been talking with Petal police, and I've been told not to say much." With the lab results indicating blood and a missing pregnant 17-year-old last seen with her ex-boyfriend in the early morning hours outside of a Pizza Hut 5 hours before she vanished, police began to take things more seriously. The Hattiesburg American reported that 3 days after Angela disappeared, on September 13th, search and rescue and cadaver dogs brought in from Louisiana followed a trail to the river and indicated something was in the water. Divers and search boats scoured the area, but did not find Angela. They were working on a 3-day-old trail. They might not have found Angela, but a search of the area did turn up a clue. A pair of white slip-on Keds sneakers were found that were believed to be Angela's. One shoe was found in tall grass near where her car had been abandoned, and the other was found on a nearby private road. The placement of the shoes indicated that they had slipped off as she was being dragged. After several days, the search of the Leaf River was called off, but Angela was still missing. Her mom, Deborah, turned to the media to help find her daughter. She spoke to the local newspapers, wrote national TV shows, and quit her job as an assistant restaurant manager to focus completely on finding Angela. Deborah told the press that Angela's set of keys to her car and her purse had not been found with her car or at the scene, and further that Angela always carried a small, two-handled purse, and in that purse was her diary. She felt that if the diary could be located, there might be a clue that could lead police to the person responsible for her disappearance. In addition to keeping Angela's name in the press, Deborah organized large community garage sales to raise money for a reward. That reward ultimately ended up reaching $15,000. The days turned into weeks, the weeks months, and the months into years, and Angela remained missing. Nearly 2 years after Angela vanished, two more people from Petal, a young couple, also disappeared, 27-year-old William Hatcher and 21-year-old Robbie Bond. The similarities in the disappearances were eerie. On May 15, 1995, friends of the couple found William's black Chevy S10 pickup truck abandoned near the Monad Bridge. When investigators arrived on scene, they found torn clothing, bloodstains, jewelry, and a knife near the black truck, but William Hatcher and Robbie Bond were missing. Their bodies would later be recovered, and Kenneth Moody, along with his cousin David Moody, would ultimately be convicted of their murders. But that's a story that I'm gonna have to tell you next week, because today we want to keep the focus on Angela. It is important to mention, though, because for a time there was heavy suspicion that the cousins had something to do with Angela's disappearance. And I mean, of course there was. The vehicles were found in the same location, and the blood? At first glance, it appeared that whoever had taken Angela had also murdered William and Robbie. Many in the community believed they were responsible, and at least for a time, investigators thought the cases could be related. So much so that the location where William and Robbie were found was searched, investigators looking for 17-year-old Angela. As the Moody cousins' case made its way to trial, their defense team claimed that the prosecutor and the sheriff's department were trying to pin Angela's disappearance on the cousins. Defense attorney Bob Helfrich spoke to the Hattiesburg American back in 1995. He stated, "I think the district attorney's office and the Perry County Sheriff's Office are trying to sensationalize this event. They're trying to pin Angela Freeman on these boys because they cannot solve that crime." The at-the-time district attorney Glenn White fired back and said, "Nobody said that Angela Freeman is connected to them. This crime is sensational in its own right because of the heinous nature of the events, not anything the sheriff's office or district attorney's office has done." And it seems as more evidence was collected in the Moody case, investigators and prosecutors moved away from the theory that Angela's case was connected in any way. For what it's worth, which ain't much if you ask me, according to another defense attorney for Kenneth Moody, Kenneth had taken a lie detector test about Angela's disappearance. And according to that attorney, Michael Adelman, he, quote, "had no knowledge about that and passed the polygraph." I'm not too sure polygraphs are worth more than the paper they're printed on, However, like we talked about before, it seems investigators never found a strong link between the two cases. And with that, Angela's case went cold again. In 1999, further testing was performed on the blood found in Angela's car and that puddle on the bridge. That DNA testing showed that the blood was in fact Angela Freeman's, and her missing persons case officially became a homicide investigation. Investigators believe that Angela had in fact been murdered, but they needed to prove it. Police thought they got a break in June of 2001, when, according to the Doe Network, archaeologists or surveyors in a wooded area off an old logging road in Perry County discovered skeletal remains. Forensic scientists were able to determine that the victim was a woman and that she had died from blunt force trauma to the head. At first, investigators believed they had found Angela Freeman, but DNA testing ruled Angela out, and to this day, the woman now referred to as the Perry County Jane Doe remains unidentified. The Perry County Jane Doe is estimated to be around 20 to 35 years old, a white female, 4'7" to 5'2". Between 100 to 170 pounds with brown hair. Clothing was recovered with her, a Xanadu button-up. Xanadu was a popular fashion brand in the 90s and early 2000s. Size 16 knee-length blue jeans, silver or pink undergarments, and size 6 wide brown leather sandals were also recovered. I'd like to point out here that based on height and size, those jeans could be a children's or youth size 16. The victim was believed to have been murdered at least 5 years prior to discovery, but no more than 10 years. So that would be somewhere between 1991 and 1996. The area in which the remains were recovered was about a mile off Red Hill Road on U.S. Forest Service land, 5 miles south of New Augusta. In January of 2002, a memorial service was held for Angela Freeman, despite the fact that her body had not been found. For her family, it afforded them some small piece of closure. Her mother, Deborah, spoke to the Hattiesburg American and said, "I've got to do it for myself. I don't want people to think I'm giving up. I'm not. But it's been more than 8 years, and I need to give her something." Angela's life, along with the life of her unborn daughter, Christian, was honored. But just as she said, Deborah didn't give up. She continued to keep Angela's name in the press as much as she could and pushed the police for answers. Angela Freeman's case was reviewed by Rusty Keyes, who is the police chief of the University of Southern Mississippi and also oversees a cold case unit and has a really cool name. Anyhow, somewhere around 2006, Police Chief Keyes completed his investigation and later told WJTV 12 that all evidence indicated that Angela had been murdered and that they actually had a suspect in mind. He stated to the outlet, "We were able to develop a suspect, and we turned that case into the Forest and Perry County District in his office a few years ago. The case we made, we feel good about that case. The district attorney, you know, of course, has their opinion on what evidence they need to prosecute. But anybody can come forward if they have information." It seems Police Chief Keyes, as well as former Sheriff of Perry County, Mitch Nobles, feel the case is strong enough to seek an indictment. Fast forward all the way to 2022, when at the time Sheriff Mitch Nobles spoke to the Hub City Spokes and told the outlet that he had turned the case over to Perry County District Attorney Lynn Carter nearly 3 years earlier in 2020, believing his agency, along with the other agencies who had investigated Angela's case, had narrowed it down to one single suspect. Neither Police Chief Keyes nor Sheriff Nobles have publicly named that suspect. To date, the District Attorney's Office has decided not to move forward with an indictment. And I'd just like to note here that Lynn Carter is still serving as District Attorney of both Forest and Perry counties. Over 3 decades have passed. Angela remains missing. Law enforcement believes she has been murdered and feel that they know who is responsible, but that person has still not been brought to justice. Despite it all, Angela's mother pushes forward. She spoke to WJTV 12 News and said, "I will never give up. They might give up, but I'm not. Because God is going to put this together. People might think I'm crazy, but it's going to be put together one day. And that's my heart, you know. And I need to know what happened to her. I need to get peace in my heart." Angela Freeman was born on January 16, 1976. She was last seen with her ex-boyfriend Stephen in the parking lot of the Pizza Hut restaurant on Central Avenue in Petal, Mississippi, at approximately 1 a.m. on September 10, 1993. Her silver 1984 Honda Accord hatchback was abandoned at the Old Monnet Bridge in Perry County, Mississippi. The bridge is approximately 10 miles away from the Petal Pizza Hut. A puddle of Angela's blood was located near the vehicle. Her white Kedge sneakers were found near the scene, but her purse and her keys have never been found. She was 17 years old and 4 months pregnant with a little girl she planned to name Christian at the time of her disappearance. Angela failed to collect a paycheck for $223.19 from the Crystal's restaurant. She is approximately 5'3", 108 pounds, with light brown straight hair, blue eyes, and a scar on her left leg below the knee. Angela was possibly wearing a white t-shirt with shorts or blue jeans at the time of her disappearance. She would be 50 years old today. There is a $15,000 reward for information. Anyone with information is urged to call Crime Stoppers at 601-582-STOP. Or the Perry County Sheriff's Office at 601-964-8461. You can remain anonymous. Someone out there knows something, and you could have that one piece of information that leads to the indictment of the suspect in this case. It's beyond time to do the right thing. And that, my friends, is all I've got for this week. Be sure to join me next Thursday for an all-new episode. Next week, I'll be covering the murders committed by the Moody cousins. In the meantime, you can find me on Instagram at @least_of_these or my Facebook at Least of These Podcast. And if you're sick of ad interruptions, I've got good news for you. You can get all your episodes ad-free just the way you like them for just $2 a month. And as a member of Patreon, you'll be the first to be notified when new tiers will be launched with exclusive episodes and a few bonus surprises. Head on over to patreon.com/leastofthese to support the show today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for caring. If you know something, say something. And until next time, be good to each other. Man, I feel like this case is so solvable. I think the police know exactly who did it, and they think they can prove it. I don't think the sheriff and a police chief would have told the public they were confident if they weren't really, really confident. The DA, on the other hand, I don't know what he's waiting for. In his defense, you only get one bite at the apple. Maybe he's waiting to find Angela's body. Maybe he's waiting on one more sliver of evidence. I couldn't tell you. But what I can tell you is that there have been many successful prosecutions of no-body cases, if that's what he's waiting on. There's actually a no-body homicide guy, a former federal homicide prosecutor who consults with prosecutors' offices and police departments on prosecuting no-body homicides. And if anyone in law enforcement or the DA's office connected to this case happens to be listening, y'all should reach out to Tad Tobias. His website is something like nobodycases.com. The man wrote a whole book about it, and he successfully either prosecuted or consulted on a number of nobody homicide cases. Reach out to that guy like yesterday. Again, his name is Tad Tobias. This ain't sponsored or nothing, I'm just letting y'all know. Whoever is responsible took two innocent lives that night and has caused a family 3 decades of pain, 3 decades of questions. three decades of a nightmare they can't escape from, and they need to be held accountable. If you're asking me, I think the person who murdered Angela is likely a romantic partner, and I think her pregnancy had everything to do with it. Homicide is still the leading cause for pregnant women in the U.S., and unfortunately, it's been that way for a long time. Angela was excited to become a mom, but perhaps the father of the child wasn't. I have to be real careful about what I say here, since no one has publicly been named a suspect, but I'm sure you can read between the lines. She was pregnant, and the last person she was seen with was her ex-boyfriend. I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to figure it out, but it does take evidence to prove it in the court of law. And because police didn't take Angela's case seriously at first, there is little physical evidence. If only her car had been secured and fingerprinted. If only the dogs had been brought out to the scene immediately. There's a lot of if-onlys, but if-onlys aren't going to lead to an indictment or a conviction. But I am convinced that someone out there knows something, and it's only a matter of time before that suspect is hauled into a courtroom. I just hope it's sooner rather than later. And that's about all I got to say about that. Y'all know I love you more than my luggage, and I can't wait to talk at you next week. But until then, bye, Bullfine!